Yes. So in the United States in 1998, as many of you may know, there was an International Religious Freedom Act passed that made religious freedom, international religious freedom and its promotion, a part of the U.S. foreign policy. And then as part of that, they set up an Office of International Religious Freedom, headed by an ambassador at large, who the first ambassador was here yesterday with us. And then in addition to that, they set up an independent U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, which is a government agency, but it's independent of any other government bureaucracy, and then can make direct recommendations to Congress and the White House on issues related to religious freedom. It has a number of independent commissioners who are not paid positions, so therefore they have complete independence from the government. And then each year they're charged with putting together a report focusing on countries where they think either religious freedom is deteriorating or is in a critical state where egregious violations of religious freedom are being made. And then the State that branch of the U.S. Government or that commission, some would describe it more as pointing out where the problems are, and that's a role they often play. On the State Department side, which is part of the bureaucracy of the government and reports to the Secretary of State and then ultimately to the President and is responsible to Congress for its actions, they tend to take a more diplomatic approach to the issue of religious freedom. They also produce a report each year that looks at the state of religious freedom in 198 countries and territories around the world, and produces a set of facts that summarizes the situation in each country. And I've been using and reading these reports every year since they've come out. I have a team of people that studies the reports carefully and uses it as part of my research. So right now I have a team of six people reading every report that just came out this spring, and then pulling from it factual information and information. So those are two manifestations of the religious foreign policy or the foreign policy related to religious freedom. So it's a very much of an information gathering effort. And I, at least as a researcher, of course, I think that's of tremendous value, because until this data gathering effort by the Department of State, which relies on reports from the local embassies as well as NGOs in countries around the world, and other sources of information. Before that was established, it was very difficult to get any sense of, a comparative sense of how these issues play out in countries around the world. So it's not often thought about in the foreign policy terms, but governments can, with their extensive network of contacts and embassies around the world, can play a role in just making this issue better understood. And so I think that is one often unsung aspect of foreign policy around the world. A couple things that I've seen as the U.S. has engaged on this issue, aside from designating some countries of particular concern, which can bring with it some sanctions, which is rarely used, but the U.S. Government has engaged on certain issues. For instance, at the United Nations for a number of years, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation was pushing a declaration against defamation of religion, which in itself sounds like a reasonable thing. You shouldn't have people defaming religion and stirring up religious hatred. You know, that sounds reasonable. But in its actual implementation, what it was trying to give a human right to a religion rather than to individuals. So the U.S. and a number of other countries then engaged on that issue and tried to move this proposal away from protecting religions to trying to come back to a protection of people. Then there was a recent, so that, that there was a long battle at the UN Human Rights Council, and that motion was eventually tabled through the efforts and negotiation of numerous governments, including the U.S., and then they came up with a separate resolution called 1618, which is to try to address the issue of incitement to violence and religious hatred without going as far as to criminalize speech that's critical of religion. And then one of the manifestations of that that I found very interesting was that they've set up a mechanism whereby a country can host a consultation bringing in various governments and agencies to discuss how to protect religious minorities within a country. So the first consultation was held in the United States under Secretary Clinton, and it brought together especially police from Nigeria, for instance, and police from Los Angeles. And they sat down in a room as part of this consultation and said, well, how do you deal with religious issues? In Los Angeles, you know, what do you do when a Sikh wants to go with his turban and his dagger wants to go through airport security? You know, how do you handle that? And then the police could talk about that, and then the Nigerian police can talk about the issues they have. So it's a very interesting application of foreign policy, bringing it directly into a grassroots level rather than just up at the top levels of government discussing these things very theoretically. So I think, you know, the way that foreign policy is carried out is very diverse and can involve many different mechanisms. So that was one I found interesting. I'll give one more observation I had from how U.S. foreign policy worked on this issue was during the invasion of Iraq by U.S. forces after Saddam Hussein was expelled, there came eventually a process of trying to write a new constitution. And during that process, the lawyers from the U.S. side that were helping to work on this issue with the Iraqis came to the point of their Article 2 where no law can contradict the sacred law of Islam, which they wanted to put in and essentially making Islam a state religion. The U.S. side said, well, in principle, according to international law, there is no prohibition about having a state religion. And so the U.S. side in essence yielded on that issue. It didn't try to come with this issue of a freedom from religion, as you were mentioning, but allowed religion to be established within the Constitution. And so international law permits some things that seem to go against what some of the other recommendations are. And also one of the things that, as I talked to some of these lawyers who were involved in that process, they didn't have access to, for instance, the social science data I shared with you yesterday, showing that when you have very high favoritism of one religion, that's not necessarily associated with lower social hostilities, which was the argument at the time in Iraq, that we need to have this in here, otherwise we'll have social upheaval. No one will accept this constitution. Well, after the constitution was passed, then soon after that is when the Iraq civil war between Sunni and Shia erupted. So there wasn't a direct connection between what they had hoped, establishing Islam in the constitution, and, you know, immediate social, you know, that the social tensions would reduce. So some of these issues of international law, scientific data, negotiating, become very complicated, and, you know, there's a lot of national desire that happens at these points of constitution making and other issues. So to intervene with foreign policy is a very complicated and tricky thing. The last thing that I'll say is that for foreign policymakers, it's difficult to they have a difficulty in some definitional terms. So just the one on whether or not a religion can be established as the religion of the country, international law supports that. And another is this idea of laïcité and separation of religion completely from any policy. And one example is in France, where the burqa, the full Muslim, full body covering for Muslim women, has been banned from public space. And France also bans any conspicuous religious symbols when you're in public space, especially in schools or government offices. And there's great public support in France for these bans. And from their perspective, they argue that this promotes it promotes a public sphere where everyone feels just comfortable regardless of their religion. So from their perspective, it promotes this freedom from religion, a freedom from anybody feeling coerced. So, you know, how would foreign policy makers talk to France on this issue? It gets very complicated. So I don't have a particular solution to that. But in these definitions, national desires to establish a religion or national desires to keep religion from the public sphere, there's such a broad spectrum that I'm not sure that foreign policy knows how to engage on that spectrum. You know, what is the ultimate end game?